The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the 30 Podcast. Here's your host, Jazz Kang.
All right, Sixers fans, welcome to a new episode of the 30. A huge win for a shorthanded Philly 76ers squad. It was a great game. Obviously, the anticipation of Ben Simmons being back. We're going to give you all the details on that. Final score in this one, 115-106. Before we jump into it, don't forget, subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it. We are there. And of course, check us out at libertyballers.com. Joining me for the post-game edition of the show, Mr. Jackson Frank. Jackson, what a win. How did you feel watching this game? And what were your thoughts initially coming in, knowing that no Joel Embiid, no Tyrese Maxey, no James Harden? Did you actually think they would have a chance at pulling this off?
Tough thing for me to, you know, say that I thought they would have a chance. You know, Brooklyn been playing better. I know they've been playing some dinged up teams, but, you know, Ben Simmons been playing better. KD had been KD. Kyrie hadn't been himself, but there had been some role players been stepping up, including some like Seth Curry, who Sixers fans are obviously familiar with. So I had a tough team, you know, so the tough time seeing the Sixers down three starters and one of and another fourth one in Tobias Harris has come back from his own short ailment win this game, but a lot of guys stepped up. I'm sure we'll talk about it more in depth, but yeah, I did not foresee them winning this game, especially in the manner that, you know, Brooklyn waved the white flag the final 3.5 minutes there.
Yeah, Paul and I were talking before the game. He was at the arena just to give a quick preview, and we were like, okay, Vegas odds makers had this game. I think the line settled at 7.5 for Brooklyn, and we were like, hey, you know, let's just try and keep it competitive. We knew the fans were going to give it to Ben Simmons, and we'll jump into kind of deeper into his game. He finished with 11 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds. Didn't do anything in the fourth quarter, though, which really is when the Sixers kind of were able to put the game away. But you mentioned guys who stepped up. Tobias Harris, he had an injury scare in the third quarter, ended up coming back. He finished with 24.6 rebounds. You look at the game that DeAnthony Melton had, who just looking better and better and more comfortable with the Sixers. He had 22 points. Shake Milton looked good coming off the bench. Paul Reed, 19 points, 10 rebounds. When you look at how the Sixers were able to step up, obviously missing their three best players. How much credit of that do you give to Doc Rivers? Because you look back, Jackson, at that stretch last season, I don't know if you remember, I think it was in November too, that they had no Embiid, right? They had injuries. I think Maxey was out for a while and they didn't have any of their stars, but we saw how good the team played. So when you look at the coaching, and I give a lot of grief to Doc Rivers, I think I love most people who cover the Sixers and fans of the team do as well, but got to give him some credit for the way he had his guys ready for this one.
Yeah, I thought he coached a good game. I thought one of the things that he and the coaching staff all season have done really well is be flexible defensively. There's a reason they're roughly a top five defense, despite some inconsistent playing for just absences and whatnot. And, you know, we know Embiid's generally been pretty good defensively this year, but had a bit of a slow start the first few games. So I think they did that well again. The decision to predominantly play Paul Reed over Montrezl Harrell, obviously, I know is one that fans have been clamoring for a long time, but he went with it significantly. Paul Reed is having a tremendous game. It makes it easier when Reed does play like that offensively. I think I tweeted out, but he had 10 points coming into the year. He had 19 on his own in this one. So I'm someone who thinks Paul Reed should get the majority of the backup 5 minutes when Embiid's healthy, but I can understand maybe why there's a little bit of hesitation given his limitations as a finisher and roller and lack of floor spacing. But point being, I thought Doc did a good job. But generally speaking, I just think it was a really good effort by the players. You know, Melton had that off dribble jumper going that, you know, was kind of hot and cold, but he was on fire in this one. Yang Did some really good stuff. You can see kind of the value that Shake brings as a mid-range scorer off the bounce. Tobias really stepped up after coming back from an injury. So just an impressive all-around effort. And it just felt like, you know, after the first few minutes when they couldn't really get any stops, they really, really settled in. And, you know, Brooklyn missed a lot of open looks from three, but I still think, generally speaking, the defensive execution for such a shorthanded rotation against a team with that much firepower was quite commendable.
Yeah, Doc basically went with eight guys, with Niang, Korkmaz, who returned to the lineup in this one. He had some moments as well, finished with 9 points, and Paul Reed coming off the bench. But also, it does help, Jackson, that the Brooklyn Nets stink on defense. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, you look at what the Sixers are able to do, obviously shooting 16 to 32 from deep. That was a big reason why they were able to hang on. And I saw your tweet about this as well, that Brooklyn actually had a better effective field goal percentage. But the fact that the Sixers were able to get 20 offensive rebounds in this one, another big reason why they were able to win. They won the turnover battle. Everything went so right in this game. And you look at how it's been, Jackson, throughout the season. You know, of course, the team now sitting at 9-8, but going through the struggles of the injuries, losing Harden, Embiid, and Maxey, not being able to get on the same page. You know, that ugly loss to the Spurs early on in the schedule. And this was a moment, I think, that was needed for the team, right? You look at the fact that just been negativity all the way around it. And then finally, you get something like this happen in Ben's return. Looking at what the players did, you mentioned, you know, we talk about Tobias Harris, De'Anthony Melton. When you look at Toby, why do you think he was able to be so successful in this game, given what his limitations are as an offensive player? But we saw him obviously settle into, he's the number one guy on offense, maybe 1A, depending on where you view De'Anthony Melton. But why do you think Tobias Harris was so good in this one?
Yeah, he mentioned it on his post-game interview with Stephanie Reddy, to kind of why he found his rhythm after the after coming back from injury. And he kind of just said that, like, he said he meditated a little bit in the tunnel of the locker room and kind of got himself collected, because he said this was his first game, was the first option all season. And you could just tell it seemed like there's a little different approach. He was a little more aggressive, finding the switches he wanted. Brooklyn runs basically a switch-all scheme. Switch-heavy is probably the best phrase for it. And was picking on Joe Harris a lot. It was a good day for one Harris in this matchup. It was not a good day for the other Harris. And just kind of was able to get to his spots, that 5 to 6 foot range. Super physical. I think that's something that, you know, he had a couple of nice plays. And I think he drew a nice foul against Ben at one point. So just seemed like he was in total control of getting to his spots. And they sent help, and he had a couple of nice passing reads as well. I think Shake Milton hit a three to kind of stem the tide at one point, maybe early in the fourth, late in the third, when Brooklyn was looking like it might take control. So it just seemed like Tobias had a better understanding of where he wanted to go and how he wanted to get his shots as a first option after coming back from that ankle scare, rather than beforehand. Because I can imagine, maybe, that, you know, like you mentioned, that it's just, he doesn't know exactly, like, am I getting everyone involved, or I just do my thing as a scorer? Like, how am I supposed to kind of operate as, you know, the guy? And it seemed like he just decided, I'm going to go get my own, and, you know, the rest of everything else will fall where it may, and we'll make it work from there. So he was just kind of playing that bully ball a lot, and, you know, in the fourth quarter especially.
Yeah, he was able to take advantage of his size, whether it was Joe Harris, and he got a couple of switches a few times there, even with Kyrie on him, or Royce O'Neal, that he was able to back him down and just get a really an easy turnaround jumper and a good look from there. One more question for you, Jackson, about Tobias. When you look at the fact, yeah, he's basically the number four option, right? When Embiid, Harden, and Maxey are in the lineup, is there a way you think he can be utilized? Again, not going to probably get 21 shots in most games that he plays with a full set of players, but do you think there's a way now that they can look at this game and be like, hey, maybe we can put Tobias in more situations to be successful on the offensive end? Or do you think just what he's best at, which I think is taking advantage of his size against smaller guys who are guarding him, do you think that kind of will stymie the Sixers offense the way they like to run things when they have their big three in the lineup?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, just because they Embiid's the guy that's going to get those mid-post touches, and then, you know, they're going to run maybe a little more, even more pick-and-roll centric offense when Harden's out there, you know, if they stagger, you know, Embiid and Harden. But yeah, I think Harris has been solid on the year. You know, I don't think he's been as good as he was to close the last couple of months into the playoffs. But I do think you could still kind of explore those mismatches a little more in the mid post. That's clearly a space he likes to operate. He's doing so much stuff as a guy working above the break, working the corners, taking a lot of threes. He has the highest 3-point rate of his career. You know, he's shooting about almost 40% from three right now. So it doesn't feel like he has a great sense of what he wants to do inside the arc when he's not taking those threes. And so I do wonder if maybe you could try and kind of get a couple of more plays like that for him, where he's posting up smaller guys in that area, using his touch, using his physicality about 13 feet in. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to kind of know what the offense looks like coming back. Before Harden's injury, they were, I think, fifth in offensive rating. Obviously, they flip-flopped their identity, playing more defensively inclined guys and, you know, playing fewer offensively inclined guys, missing the playmaking of Harden and whatnot. So kind of be interesting where they settle in by maybe January or February. But for now, I just think you're going to see a lot of this from Tobias while guys are out, but I do think it might at least be worth exploring a little bit to see if there's at least space for a couple of those plays, a few of those touches every now and then for Tobias when everyone else is healthy. So,
yeah, maybe people won't complain about his contract as much, right, Jackson? Because I mean, they might be able to get rid of him, next year, but he's looks like, I mean, unless a team gets desperate, and the Sixers obviously can't even trade first round picks, I believe, so what, 2027 and 2029. So, going to be tough to get rid of him. And again, you got a really good Tobias Harris out there. He works hard on defense. If he was a $20 million a year guy, people would love him, but he's not. So again, earned his money definitely with his performance tonight in terms of playing up to the standard that people have of him. A couple more questions with you, for you, Jackson, about the Sixers before we get into some Ben Simmons talk. George Niang, that was fun to see him going back and forth with KD. You know what I mean? Like, obviously we know who the better player is there, but those two going at it, having some fun on the court. I miss watching that kind of stuff on the NBA floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was fun. And KD was embracing it. I thought that was cool. And I think, you know, just, you know, as an on the court, you're going to need more of that from Niang. You know, he didn't shoot well inside the arc, but you got 16 points from him on 11 shots. You're going to need him to be able to, you know, turn 11 or 12 shots into 14, 16, 17 points. Obviously, he's not going to go 4 or 5 from three every game, but the ability for him to kind of maintain good efficiency while scaling up his volume, I think, is going to be important for as long as Harden, Maxey, Embiid are out. I think generally just as long as Embiid's out, we've seen that, you know, Embiid is capable of monstering quite the load. But I think even, you know, even when Maxey's out and Harden comes back, you're going to want to see that as well. So the trash talking was fun. It's been really cool seeing Niang embrace that. And, you know, for all we can know, it doesn't seem like it goes over the line with it. But just, yeah, you know, him playing well and KD embracing it, and I'm not, and other guy, it seemed like they were getting bothered by the other. So yeah, that was definitely a really, really enjoyable part of it. And it came during a game that the game played quite well, and he's generally been really, really good this year in his role.
Yeah. And you look at him, I mean, such good value with his contract, right? Roughly at $3.4 million. I mean, tough to beat that in terms of what he brings at that price and gives the Sixers flexibility with the rest of the roster. De'Anthony Melton, another guy I wanted to talk about with you, missed a couple of games with injury a couple weeks back, but starting to find his footing now, right? Shooting over 40% for the season from the 3-point line, had a couple of big offensive games the last couple times out, 19 against Mini, almost had that, you know, that crazy sequence there where he had the steal, couldn't finish it to put the Sixers back up in a crazy comeback. 22 tonight. Is he as good as advertised, or is he reaching the level that you expected of him when the Sixers picked him up in that trade?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially tonight, you know, like I mentioned earlier in this podcast, like they need him to be able to hit those shots off the dribble. They don't really need that when everyone's healthy, but they needed him to hit some of those pull-up threes that he did in this one. Obviously, he went 1 of 5 inside the arc, but that doesn't really matter when you go 6-11 from beyond the arc. So, you know, he had 3 more steals tonight, had a really fun block late, even though the game had kind of been decided. Had the steal that basically forced Brooklyn to wave the white flag there. That was a great play from Tucker, Harris, and Melton to make that happen. Obviously, Shake following it up on the putback. So, yeah, he's been tremendous. And, you know, we're not going to expect him to go 6-11 from three every game. But if he can hover, you know, and if he can take that many threes and hit, you know, 4 of them on average most nights, maybe 5 on some nights, you're going to be in a pretty good spot. And, you know, a couple of nice passes as well. Just making stuff happen as a defender or two on and off the ball. So, yeah, the fact that you can have, you know, I don't know if we can, I don't know if you can have Shake play this well every night.
Yeah.
In a 36 minute role, but Shake's been obviously deserves his own credit the last 3 or 4 games, really finding his footing. But the fact that you can pretty much feel confident that Melton can play starters minutes, played 32 minutes in this one, and give you that starting level impact is huge, because he's your sixth man, you know, when everyone's healthy. So, He's been great, and I think he's been about everything you expected. I was a huge fan of the acquisition over the summer, and it's kind of basically been exactly what you need. And he's even gone above and beyond, I think, with all the, you know, the absences to guys like Harden and Maxey, who've missed some time already. Embiid's missed time, so Tobias has missed time. So he's been tremendous, and he and Milton really have formed a nice little bench backcourt duo who fills in and to play spot starter minutes occasionally.
You know what's funny, Jackson? We're talking about Melton and Milton, how good they were, and a guy that was, you know, the person that I think everybody looked at as the big acquisition, which is PJ Tucker, who weirdly has not scored a point in four games. Okay, that's he's played 132 minutes, has not had a single point in those four games, but pretty damn good defense on KD tonight. So you look at him. Not getting the shots I think he normally gets in terms of being open in the corner. That'll change when James Harden's back, just with the flow of the offense. But like, where do you sit at with him? Because it's weird. Normally you'd be killing a guy who hasn't scored a point in four games, but then you're kind of like, well, this is PJ Tucker and this is what he does.
Yeah, obviously, you know, four straight scoreless games is not something that, that is something that, you know, warrants some criticism. I do think it's important also to realize the context that he's struggled to get volume ever since Harden went out in November. You know, that first game was November 4th that Harden missed. So if you want to criticize kind of just the fact that he can't really get shots without Harden on the floor, then so be it. But I think you have to look at the context there, right? That Harden is by far their best skip passer. He's a guy he's the best dribble drive guy who can kind of get in those kick out passes too. He's the guy that can draw double teams so Tucker can get those short roll opportunities. And he was always going to take fewer shots going from, you know, a democratic offense like the Heat to one that's a little more hierarchical. I don't know if I pronounced that word correctly, but you know what I mean? That, you know, Maxey and Embiid and Harden are the one dominating most of the shots and the playmaking opportunities. So, I get criticizing him, you know, 0-9 over the last four games, 0 points is not something you want to see. And he definitely missed some pretty makeable shots today. But I think his defense has been really phenomenal as of late, at least over the last week, especially, you know, given Lauri Markkanen some issues last Sunday. You know, I thought Giannis got the best of him a little bit in the first half, but then he did some awesome stuff on Friday. Him kind of being the primary guy with Embiid roaming and kind of making things tough and forcing Giannis into shots away from the rim. I thought he did some good stuff against Karl-Anthony Towns on Saturday as well. And then, I think KD wasn't super aggressive in the fourth quarter, but I think that was also in part because Tucker was so good about limiting his volume the first three quarters. You know, I think he had two steals on KD, one on Kyrie, bothered a couple of KD shots, which is really impressive to do. Not a ton of guys can do that. I think the defense has been really good, and I really do expect him to be generally okay offensively whenever Harden comes back. And again, it's fine to criticize if you're like, if they paid this guy that much who's so reliant on one player to be a okay offensive contributor, but I do think the defense has been awesome, and he communicates a lot too off the ball. I think that's an important thing as well, especially with Embiid out. Embiid's often the guy that's kind of spearheading that stuff, and I think Tucker, even dating back to preseason, has been good at that. So totally fine with being frustrated by lack of scoring, but I do think we can't overlook that he's done a lot of good stuff for them defensively, and you know, both on and off the ball in a variety of ways. And that was no more evident than, you know, this win on Tuesday, where he was giving both Kyrie and KD some issues at times.
Yeah, held KD to just 20 points at 9-14. And then Kyrie had a nice little stretch during the fourth quarter where it looked like, oh, shoot, you know, he's going to get going. But still an impressive performance from him. And he paid PJ Tucker for what he's going to do for you in April, May, and hopefully June, not for what he's doing for you in November. Jackson, let's take a quick break here. I want to jump into the Ben Simmons, his game, his return, the emotions of it all. We'll do that coming up in about a minute. All right, and we're back. Jackson, wanted to jump into some talk about Ben Simmons. Like I mentioned off the top, he finished with 11 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds, finding his footing more, right? Like, you know, compared to what he started off like early in the season. But Jacques Vaughn said after the game, very impressed with how Ben played, how he handled it. But again, put up zeros in the fourth quarter, which I think Sixers fans are used to. So it's not like it was a surprise. With him coming back, what did you feel like with the emotions of it all? Do you feel like because it's been 9 months since the trade happened, that maybe things were a little bit less than what was expected? Although, I mean, I'm going to mention a few things that happened in this game. One, he did like a Jordan shrug after the free throws, missing, hitting two free throws. Take it easy. All right there. You know what I mean, Ben? Gave a shush to the crowd. We saw that as well. But again, gave the crowds free chicken nuggets as well because he missed back-to-back free throws in the second half. But looking at his return, Jackson, what did you make of all this? How is it for you? And do you think the city of Philly's never going to really move on? He's going to get booed every time he plays there throughout the rest of his career, however long that goes. But did you feel like the vitriol and everything was at the level you expected, or do you think it was a little bit tamer than what you would have thought coming into this one?
Yeah, I think no Embiid, no Harden, quelled things a little bit. And then also the fact that even though Ben didn't play when Brooklyn came last March, he was still in the arena. So fans still had their opportunity to express some discontent, even if it wasn't throughout the entire game. But I thought it was fun. I thought it was, it was cool to kind of see Ben, go back. If they're going to boo him, he's going to do the shrug and he's going to do the shushing. I think that's a funny thing all around. So, you saw kind of the entire Ben Simmons experience, right? That was really good in the first half, especially during Brooklyn's hot start. Pushing the ball was good all around. I think getting Brooklyn a lot of transition opportunities, had some really nice passes in the half court, too, to KD, 11 assists, three steals, did some good stuff and, applying pressure on the ball. But they tried to play him at the five. That didn't really work. They got killed inside on the glass because of him and Claxton as well. Couldn't do anything in the second half really offensively as a scorer. Or just as a scorer. He had some nice passes in the second half still. But you saw, like I said, so really good perimeter defense, not so much as a big man. Pretty good, transition player and first half court player. But in the second half, when they needed to maybe be a little more of an offensive threat as a scorer, he wasn't able to provide that. So, 4 of 7, 3 of 6 from the line, not the efficiency that you would look for from Ben, but I think on the aggregate, this is about kind of who Ben is. I think he's been better the last couple. I think he was better against the Grizzlies and the Blazers, but this is still a major step up from where he was before he missed some time with injury. So, if you're a Nets fan, even though you can probably be discouraged, I'm sure you're discouraged with, the team result, but I think you continually see Ben kind of progress back to who he's been for most of his career as his top 50 player and whatnot. But yeah, clearly the flaws that, kind of led to his playoff struggles during his time as a Sixer and, some of the reasons that led to the on-court departure, some of the on-court reasons that led to his departure, are evident too. So, we really kind of got the full Ben Simmons experience in some ways in this game.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, I think people were, and I said this before the game too, I think people are just pleasantly surprised that they were able to beat him and the Nets in the return of Ben Simmons coming back to Philly. And you mentioned that as well. Like, he looks like he's finding his footing. I think he'll be a lot better come time for maybe late December and January after he's played, 25, 30 games and really getting his conditioning back, getting his feel for the game back. But looking at this from a Sixers perspective, I know it's only a win on November 22nd, but how satisfying is it, Jackson, from the 76ers angle on this one?
Yeah, I think I'm sure that they, well, I think it's because like not a lot of these guys played with Ben. The roster is so different. So, yeah. But I think like, I don't know, like I don't want to speak for any players, but like, I'm sure it's a little more sweet for Joel, but I think on the whole, it's probably just like it's nice for this team to get off on the right foot, with three of their starters missing, right? Like, I'm sure that, the guys that don't are maybe content that Ben's gone enjoy a little more, but for the entire team, it's probably like, we're down our three best players. We got a team like in Brooklyn that's got star power, has been playing better. They come into our home turf, and we won, I would say, convincingly. Not a blowout, but like I said, the game was decided by the final 3.5 minutes. So I think it's to me, that's more how I read it from the Sixers perspective, is that it's like, we don't know how long we're going to be without our three best players, and we play a team that's been playing pretty well, and we got it done with our we showcased our depth. So but I'd imagine, maybe at least for fans and maybe the few people left that were here during Ben's tenure, which is not very many, right? It's Joel, yeah. It's Tobias, it's I guess it's Tyrese and Matisse.
Jake Milton, Furkan, Kirkmas, what I mean? Like, who else? There's really nobody else.
Yeah, there. I guess Paul Reed as well. I guess maybe it's a little more than I, so I guess that's, we didn't name all of them. Shake and Furkan are the second and third longest tenured Sixers, I believe, which is kind of funny.
But I
don't know. I would have to know these players more intimately and their thoughts on the whole Ben situation, but I think more than anything, it's that it's nice to get a win when your top three players are down and you're playing a team that has been performing better as of late. So, nice for them to get things started. And you know, obviously they got a back-to-back tomorrow, but they're going to play another team in the Hornets that are also missing some guys. And namely, I don't know, I haven't checked recently, but I would imagine LaMelo Ball is still out dealing with that ankle sprain, unfortunately. But yeah, now you have a chance to build a little momentum and start this thing off on a 2-0 streak. But who knows? What's they got 48 more minutes at least to figure that out on Wednesday.
Yeah, and Joel Embiid, they're saying, you know, missing two games, but Doc did say before this one that he might miss a week or so coming back at the same time as Harden. And looking at the schedule, if you can go 2-1 in this stretch, we're going to be tough to win a back-to-back. I think, you know, it's a short trip to Charlotte, but playing them on a back-to-back when you have to play your horses 35, 40 minutes in this one. And then you got Orlando, right? Back-to-back games in Florida on Friday and Sunday. So again, maybe getting a split there or go 2-1. People will be feeling pretty good as Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, James Harden start to get back into the fold. One final question for you, Jackson, about all this. I know, like I said, Ben's first time back, nothing can ever really replace the anticipation going into this one, although I think that was quelled a little bit just with given with the injuries and stuff. But January 25th, he's back again, and that's a nationally televised game on ESPN. Do you still think the emotions will be high, assuming that Joel and Harden are back for that one?
I don't know. Yeah, I think it'd definitely be a little higher just because it'll be the first time that all three of those guys have been on the court together since the trade. I think some of it will also depend on kind of where each team is at record-wise, you know, just on the whole and also just kind of where they've been over the past two or three weeks. But yeah, I think, you know, if you have the kind of the Ben's former co-star and then the guy that he was traded for on the floor, the intensity will be a little higher, but who knows? It's just such a far ways off in the distance. The Nets feel like a team that you can't foresee anything more than like 3 days out. Given kind of everything that seems to happen with them once a week. But yeah, I'd imagine if Joel and Harden are out there and Ben's, you know, still healthy and whatnot and playing, you know, pretty well, that, you know, the intensity will be higher than it was today. But I don't know, it didn't, you know, didn't seem, just from the broadcast, it didn't seem incredibly animated. And this one seemed kind of about what you'd expect, you know, for any player that maybe an opposing team doesn't like, rather than Ben Simmons, who, you know, might be the least liked player among Sixers fans these days.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, you know, going off the top on this one, this has been a long time coming. I think people were anticipating this for so long. And I still think people want to see Joel against Ben and kind of how will it be icy when they're shaking hands before the game? Will they, you know what I mean? Those little things I think will be something to keep an eye on. But for the meantime, feel good win here, Jackson. I think everybody around Philly's celebrating this one and enjoying it. Again, only a game in November, but we know what the circumstances were for this one, you know, giving up a former number one overall pick and how things ended. So again, an impressive win for the Sixers. Everything went right for them. So feel good about this. We'll see what happens against Charlotte on Wednesday. But Jackson, of course, thanks for joining me in this one, and we're going to do it again soon.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. You know, hopefully we've got at least one of the big three back by the next time we're talking a Sixers game.
Yeah, for sure. And again, I don't know how many games we're going to get away with being watching a really process era roster that they fielded tonight. I don't know how many times you can get feel good moments without those three in the lineup, but hopefully they'll be back soon. That'll do it for this one. As I mentioned off the top, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it. We are there. And of course, check us out online as well at libertyballers.com.